One thing I was noticing as I was just putting this class on Facebook, I just happened to glance at Facebook, some of the, what's called the news feed. Quite interesting how most of the people, even devotees, they're basically just showing off their bodies and the latest hairstyle and the latest outfit they're wearing. Not the sannyasis, of course. I was just thinking, we're not the body, we're not these clothes, and all of a sudden, everybody's showing off the latest makeup, the eyeshadow, and I just like, what is happening? It's not the same Hare Krishna movement that I joined 10,000 years ago. It's become more like a fashion show. It's like, woo! Anyway, it's just like, like the word, all of you know, like the word cognitive dissonance. You hear that you're not the body, and then you act like you are the body, and you think you're Krishna conscious. Anyway, I guess it's the age of Trump, so I can expect anything in this day and age. Anyway, I definitely will try not to look at Facebook again because it's very shocking. I mean, I'm broadcasting on Facebook, so I can't avoid it. But, it's just like, what? Whatever happened to, Hare Krishna, you're not the body, the embodied souls changing from boyhood to youth to old age, then takes another body, decorations of a dead body. I remember all these different statements when I was young in Krishna consciousness, decorating a dead body. Actually, if we could use our propensity to decorate bodies, we can decorate Krishna's transcendental body. So we have deities here, and those of you who are listening, and some of you may just turn me off after I speak like this. So those of you who are listening, there's deities, and so you just like get jewelry for the deities, get earrings for the deities, get flowers for the deities, get new outfits for the deities, new outfits for the guru. Because the nice thing about being a sannyasi is just the outfits are always the same. So it's not that I can just show off my latest outfit to everybody. Anyway, enough of that. I was just like shocked to see that when I just went on to Facebook to link this Zoom page to Facebook. On that happy note, after I lose half of my disciples, on that happy note, we're going to chant Jai Radha Madhava. All right, I think we're ready to go. Right. Jaya Radha Madhava Kunjabihari Jaya Radha Madhava Oh, Kunjabihari Gopi Janabalaba Giribhadatahuti Gopi Janabalaba Giribhadatahuti Yashodanandana Yashodanandana Brajajanuranjana Yamuna Tira Vanachati Yamuna Tira Vanachati Jayaradhamadhova Kunjabihavati Jayaradhamadhova Uma kunyabihari gopi jana malaba kiribarada hoti gopi jana malaba kiribarada hoti Yashoda nandana braja jano ranjana Yashoda nandana braja jano ranjana Yamuna tira banachare Yamuna tira banachare Jaya Radha Madhava Kunyabihari Jaya Radha Madhava Kunyabihari Jai Om Vishnupad Paramahansa Paravatakacharya Ostateta Satishi Shimad His Divine Grace Abaya Chananada Bhaktivananda Goswami Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Iskan Founder Acharya, Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Ananda Koti Vaishnava Vrinda ki jai, Namacharya Srila Haridas Thakur ki jai. Friends, say kaho Shri Krishna, Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sidvaita Garadha, Shri Basadi Gaur Bhakta Vrinda ki jai. Shishi, Radha Krishna Gopi Gopinath Shyam Kun Radhagunda Giri Govardhan Ki Jai Vrindavanam Ki Jai Maturam Ki Jai Jagadvasami Ki Jai Yamunamayi Ki Jai Shrimati Lasi Devi Ki Jai Sindhavita Vakta Vrinda Ki Jai Govardhamananda Hari Hari Om All glorious the assembled devotees, all glorious to the assembled devotees, all glorious the assembled All glories to Shri Guru and Gauranga, Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Gaur Premananda, Hari 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 Go. Hare Krishna, Sai Bhutale, Srimati Bhakti Bhananta Swami, Namani. Namaste, Saraswati Devi, Gaur Vani Pacharni, Nivashesha, Shunya Vadi, Paschacha, Deja Tarni. So, Omagana, Timidanda, Shaganan, Jana, Shalakya, Chakshuram, Meditam. Yena Tosmai Shri Gurave Namaha. So it's good to see everybody this afternoon or this morning, wherever you are. And we're going to continue with our reading of the ninth chapter of the Bhagavad Gita. We only have one more verse to go in the ninth chapter, the last verse, which is, I left it over for today because it's such an important verse. It's one of the most important verses in Bhagavad Gita. It actually has almost a dual verse later on in the 18th chapter. Okay. Let's go. And some of you will recognize this verse. So the verse goes as follows. And this is actually the essence of Krishna consciousness. Manmana bhava mad bhakto Madhyajiman namaskuru, mami vaishasi yutvaivam, atmanam matparayana. Matmanaha, always thinking of me, bhava become mat my bhaktaha, devotee, mat my yaji, worshipper, mam unto me, namaskuru, offer obeisances, mam unto me, eva, completely. Ishyasi, you will come, yuktva, being absorbed, evam, thus, atmanam, your soul, atmanayana, devoted to me. So, before you read the translation, atmana, means to somehow or other always think of Krishna. That's the first regulative principle, to always think of Krishna. The second one is never forget Krishna. And so that means to think of Krishna's pastimes, what he does in the spiritual world, Krishna's qualities, Krishna's name, Krishna's devotees, Krishna's service. There's a lot of things that are really connected to Krishna. Krishna's movement, the Hare Krishna movement. Let me turn off the phone. This is Krishna's phone, but I'm not going to think of it during the class. I'm going to try to think of something else. So, just everything connected to Krishna is non-different from Krishna. And Baba Mak Bhaktaha, become a devotee, like Bhaktaha means not someone who likes someone else, but someone who is completely devoted. Devotee, devoted. Mat Mai Yashi, worshiper, Mam unto me. Namaskuru, offer obeisances. Let's describe what obeisances are. As this famous musician once said, bow down, mister. Hare Krishna, Hare Ram. Anyway, I know who it is. I'm not going to mention his name. So, what are the obeisances? Why do we bow down? Well, we bow down because it's like an offering of everything to Krishna, especially the dandavat. Dandavat. Dandavat means like a stick. Sometimes you'll see the devotees like go boom, like a stick down like that. So that means, Krishna, I'm yours. That's really what it means. And sometimes it means I offer respect like that, but definitely it's a sign of surrender because you're touching your head to the ground. So in other words, I surrender to you, Krishna. And but eva completely. And then if you do that, yuktva, you'll be connected, absorbed, connected, that's what the word means. And atmanam, that is your very soul, self, which is a soul, and devoted to me. Matparayana means me as the goal. Okay. Engage your mind always in thinking of me, become my devotee, offer obeisances to me, worship me, being completely absorbed in me, surely you will come to me. In this verse, it is clearly indicated that Krishna consciousness is the only means of being delivered from the clutches of this contaminated material world. Why is it the only way? Because Krishna says, Mama eva prapajante nayam tam ranti te. He says, Mama maya durachya. Here we go. That this is my illusory energy. So the illusory energy is actually keeping us in this world, and that illusory energy is Krishna's energy. And because it's Krishna's energy, it's very powerful. More powerful than we are. Mama maya durachya. Mama eva ye prapajante nayamitam tarantite. But one who surrenders into Krishna, the illusory energy actually helps one in his devotional service. Sometimes unscrupulous, that means dog-like, commentators distort the meaning of what is clearly stated here, that all devotional service should be offered to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna. Unfortunately, unscrupulous commentators divert the mind of the reader to that which is not at all feasible. Such commentators do not know that there is no difference between Krishna's mind and Krishna. Krishna is not an ordinary human being. He is the absolute truth. His body, his mind, and he himself are one and absolute. It is stated in the Kurma Purana, as it is quoted by Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, in Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Goswami, and his Anubhasha comments on the Chaitanya Charitamrita in the 5th chapter, Adi Leela, verses 41-48. Dehadehi vi vedo yamnishvare vidyate kvachit. This means that there is no difference in Krishna, the Supreme Lord, between himself and his body. But because the commentators do not know this science of Krishna, they hide Krishna and divide his personality from his mind or from his body. Although this is sheer ignorance of the science of Krishna, some men make profit out of misleading people. Prabhupada here is indirectly or directly making reference to Dr. Radha Krishna. Dr. Radha Krishna was the president of India at one particular point, and he took this particular verse because he published his own Bhagavad Gita commentary. Also the verse in the 18th chapter, Manmanabhavatto Madhyashimam Namaskuru. Mami Vaishasi Satsamate Pratijane Priyosine. That's the 18th chapter verse. But it's a very similar verse. He took this Manmana Bhavamad Bhakto to indicate that it's not to the person Krishna we should surrender, but to the unborn beginningless within Krishna. Although Krishna is using the personal pronoun mom, mat, etc., which means me. For example, if I say, you should serve me, you should surrender to me, you should do whatever I want, and then you say, well, you don't really mean that. That would be sheer stupidity. So this person did that. And I guess I should tell you, even though it's going to aggravate some people, where Prabhupada said he took his next birth. Oh my God, he said it like a dog in Sweden. Anyway, forget that I said that. That Prabhupada said it. Although this is sheer ignorance of the science of Krishna, some men make profit out of misleading people. There are some who are demoniac. They also think of Krishna, but enviously, just like King Halangsa, Krishna's uncle. He was also thinking of Krishna always, but he thought of Krishna as his enemy. He was always in anxiety, wondering when Krishna would come to kill him. That kind of thinking will not help us. One should be thinking of Krishna in devotional love. That is bhakti. One should cultivate the knowledge of Krishna continuously. What is that favorable cultivation? It has to be learned from a bona fide teacher, as a spiritual master. Krishna is the supreme personality of Godhead, and we have several times explained that his body is not material, but is eternal blissful knowledge. That's from the Rama Samhita. This kind of talk about Krishna will help one become a devotee. Understanding Krishna otherwise from the wrong source will prove fruitless. One should therefore engage his mind in the eternal form, the primal form of Krishna. So Krishna has many different aspects, forms, avatars, appearances, expansions. But Prabhupada here is advocating we should meditate on Krishna's form in Vrindavan. With conviction in his heart that Krishna is the supreme, he should engage himself in worship. There are hundreds of thousands of temples in India for the worship of Krishna. And devotional service is practiced there. When such practice is made, one has to offer obeisances to Krishna. One should lower his head before the deity and engage his mind, his body, his activities, everything. That will make one fully absorbed in Krishna without deviation. This will help one transfer to the Krishna Loka, that means Krishna's planet. One should not be deviated by unscrupulous commentators, cheating commentators. One must engage in the 9 different processes of devotional service, beginning with hearing and chanting about Krishna. Pure devotional service is the highest achievement of human society. Pretty self-explanatory. The 7th and 8th chapters of the Bhagavad Gita have explained pure devotional service to the Lord that is free from speculative knowledge, mystic yoga, and fruitive activities. Those who are not purely sanctified may be attracted by different features of the Lord, like the impersonal Brahma Jyoti and localized Paramatma. But a pure devotee directly takes to the service of the Supreme Lord. There's a beautiful poem about Krishna in which it is clearly stated that any person who is engaged in the worship of demigods is most unintelligent and cannot achieve at any time the supreme reward of Krishna. The devotee in the beginning may sometimes fall from the standard, but still he should be considered superior to all other philosophers and yogis. One who always engages in Krishna consciousness should be understood to be a perfectly saintly person. His accidental non-devotional activities will diminish, and he will soon be situated without any doubt in complete perfection. Prabhupada is just reiterating what went before in this particular chapter. Kuntiha Pratijanihi Name Bhakti Pranashati. Pure devotee has no actual chance to fall down. Therefore, the intelligent person should take directly to the process of Krishna consciousness and happily live in this material world. He will eventually receive the supreme reward of Krishna. So the question is, how can we happily live in this material world? Well, if we're connected internally with Krishna, then even if everything externally goes wrong, we're still happy because we have that foundational relationship with Krishna going on in our hearts. That's all. We just meditate on that. And we're able to see the difficulties in this world in relationship to Krishna. If something happens that makes life very difficult, I mean, let's say you get hurt in a certain way, or sick in a certain way, or someone dies in a certain way, you take that as a method to become more Krishna conscious because it's been arranged by Krishna. It's been arranged by Krishna. So you take that as an opportunity, not as a problem, but as an opportunity and a challenge. And we have so many challenges. So thus end the Bhaktivedanta purports, the ninth chapter of the Srimad Bhagavad Gita in the matter of the most confidential knowledge. So just to reiterate, the most confidential aspect of knowledge is being revealed in this particular chapter, in the last chapter, chapter 9, is the Acincha Beda Tattva philosophy, which is mentioned in the beginning, and also the verse, Shatana Purusha Dharma Shasha Purandapa Prapunam Bhartande, which is Samsara Bhartmani, that one should have faith, one should not be envious. Idam tu te, first verse in the chapter, Idam tu te gudyatamam prapacham anisuyave gyanavijnanam asyam brahmat. So Krishna says, because you are not envious of me, Idam tu te gudyatamam, I'm going to reveal the most secret of all secrets, the confidential knowledge. And he goes, anisuyave, you are not envious. And by that knowledge, you will become liberated. And then, of course, the Acincha Beda Beda Tattva philosophy. So chapter 10 is in a little bit different mood than chapter 9. In chapter 10, we actually become introduced to Krishna's greatness to, a greater extent. In chapter 9, we learn how Krishna is everything, and we should meditate on Krishna and see Krishna everywhere. And one who is a devotee, even if he commits the most abominable action, he's considered saintly because he's in the right path, and quickly he'll achieve the right destination, and ultimately everyone should just be manmana bhavana bhakto, or be thinking of Krishna and worshipping Krishna. But chapter 10, we're going to hear how great, big, powerful Krishna is. Very wonderful chapter. All wondrous phenomena, showing power, beauty, grandeur, or sublimity, either in the material world or in the spiritual, are but partial manifestation of Krishna's divine energies and opulence. As the supreme cause of all causes and the support and essence of everything, Krishna is the supreme object of worship for all beings. So, stand by to get impressed. So, text 1. Sri Bhagavan Vacha Bhuya Heva Mahabaho Srinume Paramam Vachaha Yateham Priyamanaiha Makshami Hita Kamyaya Sri Bhagavan Vacha, the Supreme Personality of God, has said, Bhuyaha, again, Eva, certainly, Mahabaho, O Mighty Armed, Srinu, just here may my Paramam Supreme Vachaha instruction, yat that which te to you, aham I, priyamanaya, thinking you dear to me, vakshyami say hita kamyaya, for your benefit. The Supreme Personality of God had said, listen again, O mighty armed Arjuna, because you are my dear friend, for your benefit I shall speak to you further, giving you knowledge that is better than what I have already explained. So this knowledge would be really impressive. So, purport, the word Bhagavan is explained thus by Parashara Muni, one who is full in six opulences. So, this is an important concept. What Bhagavan means? Bhaga means opulence. Van means complete or full. So, these are Krishna's six opulences. All of us have these opulences, but not in the same to the same extent that Krishna has. So Krishna has full, now here we're talking about unlimited strength, full fame, unlimited fame, unlimited wealth, knowledge, unlimited knowledge, unlimited beauty. So next time you go on the internet and show off your beauty, realize that Krishna has unlimited beauty. You better show off his beauty. And renunciation. Krishna is the most renounced. How can we say that? Because Krishna owns everything, yet he's not interested in this whole material world. That is extreme renunciation. So Krishna is Bhagavan, or the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So that's what Bhagavan means, to be full of these opulences. And so if someone declares themselves to be God, and there have been many people who have declared themselves to be God, just see, do they have all these opulences in unlimited degree? What about strength? Okay, here's a god that comes along and said, okay, can I arm wrestle you? All right, you arm wrestle him and you defeat him. Full fame. Are you famous everywhere? Krishna is famous. I mean, everybody knows about God. Even the atheists, they talk about him all the time. Wealth. How much wealth do you have? Krishna owns everything. How much knowledge? Krishna is in every atom. He knows everything. He knows past, present, future. Do you know all the future, what's going to happen? No. Are you all beautiful? There are no defects, even in your material body? Actually, there's an interesting advertisement from the 1960s that, anyways, one of these lusty advertisements. It says the closer you get, the more you need Noxzema. Of course, Noxzema is something to cover up all your imperfections in your body. So if you think someone is really beautiful, we use this example many times before when we were fanatic brahmacharis. If you think someone is really beautiful, just go this close to them, you know, just like put your eyeball like right up to their eyeball or something like that, that close. And you see the pores in the body. Is that beauty? But Krishna's body is eternity, full of eternity, bliss, and knowledge. You can get this close, you get this close, however close you want to get, it's all beautiful. And he never gets old. And he never gets sick. And renunciation, we already mentioned that. Someone who doesn't try to enjoy anything in the material world because he's Atmarami, self-satisfied. While Krishna was present on this earth, he displayed all six opulences. Therefore, great sages like Parashara Muni have accepted Krishna, have all accepted Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Now, Krishna is instructing Arjuna in more confidential knowledge of his opulences in his work. Previously, beginning with the seventh chapter, the Lord has already explained his different energies and how they are acting. Now, in this chapter, he explains his specific opulences to Arjuna. He gives examples. He doesn't explain or give examples of all the opulences, examples of all the opulences, but he touches upon a few of them. And Krishna, at the end of the chapter, he says, what is the use of all this detailed knowledge with a single fragment of my energy? I convey the entire cosmos. So, in other words, what we're going to be impressed by in this particular chapter is basically insignificant. But still, we're going to get impressed. In this previous chapter, he has clearly explained his different energies to establish devotion and firm conviction. Again, in this chapter, he tells Arjuna about his manifestations and various opulences. The more one hears about the Supreme God, the more one becomes fixed in devotional service. One should always hear about the Lord and the association of devotees. That will enhance one's devotional service. Discourses in the society of devotees can take place only among those who are really anxious to be in Krishna conscious. I am definitely anxious. Others cannot take part in such discourses. The Lord clearly tells Arjuna that because Arjuna is very dear to him, for his benefit, such discourses are taking place. Arjuna is taking our part. Although Arjuna is a pure devotee of the Lord, understands all these things, even beforehand, still, he is acting under the influence of Yoga Maya. He is acting as one of us, every man or every woman. And Krishna is answering his doubts, or encouraging him, or showing him opulences that will further inspire him. So here, let's continue. Namevatu Suragana Prabhavan Na Maharshiha Hamadir Hidevana Maharshinam Cha Sarvashaha. Na, never, may, my, vidhu, no. Suragana, the demigods, Prabhavam, origin, opulences, na, never, Maharishya, great sages, aham, I am, he, the origin, he, certainly. Devanam, of the demigods, Maharishinam, of the great sages, cha, also, sarvashaha, in all respects. So here Krishna begins to talk about his greatness. Neither the host of the demigods nor the greatest sages know my origin or opulences. And actually, Krishna has no origin. And there's no limit to his opulence. For in every respect, I am the source of the demigods and sages. He's the original father. Purport. As stated in the Brahma Samhita, Lord Krishna is the Supreme Lord. No one is greater than him. He is the cause of all causes. Here it is stated by the Lord personally that he is the cause of all the demigods and sages. Even the demigods and great sages cannot understand Krishna. They can understand neither his name nor his personality. So what is the position of the so-called scholars of this teeny planet? I know it's tiny. The Prabhupada would sometimes say teeny. No one can understand why the Supreme God comes to earth as an ordinary human being and executes such wonderful, uncommon activities. Now, why is it that we can understand? That is Prabhupada's mercy. Before we were given this knowledge by Prabhupada, we didn't know anything about anything. Why does God come to earth? I don't know. Act as an ordinary human being. Can't relate to that. So, you know, but Prabhupada, it's really simple. His why, you know, in other words, why Krishna does that. You know, how he does it, that's for him to figure out. But why, we know. Of course, as we were speaking about in class this morning and the previous morning, it's to annihilate the miscreants, save the devotees, establish religious principles, and even esoterically, for his own enjoyment, because he is Rasa Raj. He's enjoying different rasas. This morning, we were talking about how Krishna enjoys the ghastly ras and the anger ras, which is unbelievable to people who are not Krishna conscious. How can God enjoy anger? I mean, we can enjoy anger, that's why you watch football games. So God also has that part of his personality. He likes to enjoy anger, he likes to enjoy chivalry, he likes to enjoy humor. Why not? God is very humorous. And he has devotees who are very humorous, like Madhu Mangal. And even pure devotees, they have a sense of humor. That's one of their qualities. Like one time, the devotees were in an airplane with Srila Prabhupada, and they were trying not to watch the video, but Prabhupada wasn't trying not to watch the video. He was watching the video. Happened to be a video about Charlie Chaplin. None of you would know who Charlie Chaplin is, but anyway. He's an ancient comedian. And Prabhupada used to watch his movies when Prabhupada was young. And Prabhupada was laughing at the movie. So, you know, these things are meant for Krishna's enjoyment. And also we can enjoy in Krishna consciousness in the same way. When we hear Krishna annihilating the miscreants, we have enjoyment. Even though it's quite ghastly sometimes. Once you know then that scholarship is not the qualification necessary for understanding Krishna. Even the demigods and the great sages have tried to do so. They've tried to understand Krishna by their mental speculation, and they have failed to do so. In the Srimad Bhagavatam also it is clearly said that even the great demigods are not able to understand the Supreme Personality of God. The Sanskrit is Muyanti Yat Suryaha. They are bewildered. They can speculate to the limits. But Prabhupada is so kind, he's explained all these things in common English. Wow! We have this knowledge that even the demigods, or many of them, because there are pure devoted demigods, even many of the demigods cannot understand. The great sages, the philosophers, or to speak of the teeny, I know, tiny, philosophers in the universities here, or even the philosophers in the higher planets, they can't understand. What mercy we have. They can speculate to the limits of their imperfect senses and can reach the opposite conclusion of impersonalism. Of course, in other words, they take the observation of this material world, they're looking at all the different qualities, and they think spirituality is the opposite. You know, if you have persons in this world, spirituality means impersonalism. If you have activities in this world, spirituality means no activities. It's like I've seen an impersonalist, we're quite familiar with this person because this person comes to the temple quite often, and they can sit doing nothing for 8 hours because they think that's spiritual. You know, you negate everything and you get something spiritual, which is ridiculous. Spiritual exists as the original form from which everything in this world manifests. Or, in other words, everything in this world is a reflection of the spiritual forms, activities, personalities, and everything else like that in the spiritual realm. Of something not manifest by the three qualities of material nature, or they can imagine something by mental speculation. But it is not possible to understand Krishna by such foolish speculation. Here the Lord indirectly says that if anyone wants to know the absolute truth, here I am present as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. I am the Supreme. One should know this. Although one cannot understand the inconceivable Lord who is present, personally present, he nonetheless exists. We can actually understand Krishna, who is eternal, full of bliss and knowledge, simply by studying his words in Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam. The conception of God as some ruling power or as the impersonal Brahman can be reached by persons who are in the inferior energy of the Lord. But the personality of Godhead cannot be conceived unless one is in the transcendental position. In other words, you don't really have to be transcendental. You can simply use material means to reach the conception that God is just the greatest ruler, or that everything's ultimately impersonal. Let me merge into the energy. I mean, that you can figure that out in your tiny little brain. But if you have transcendental information given in disciplic succession, especially by Prabhupada, then you can understand Krishna. This is such a great gift. As said, Bahunam Janmanamante Yanavamam Prapachate Vasudeva Sarvamiti Samahatma Sudrulabha. After many, many, many births, those who are actually in knowledge come to understand Krishna. And here we have been given this information on a silver, gold, diamond platter by His Divine Grace to the Prabhupada. We don't understand how thankful we should be to Prabhupada. This most elevated knowledge, you know, talking about the Chincha Veda Veda Tattva, the nature of Krishna, the way to achieve Krishna, all these things are very easily understood because of Prabhupada's mercy. And Prabhupada is actually presenting us Lord Chaitanya's mercy. Because most men cannot understand Krishna's actual situation, out of his causeless mercy descends to show favor to such speculators. In other words, he says, you know, this is what I do. Yet, despite the Supreme Lord's uncommon activities, these speculators, due to contamination of the material energy, still think that the impersonal Brahman is supreme. Only the devotees, in spite of like hearing about Krishna's activities, or some people even saw Krishna, and they thought the impersonal Brahman is supreme. Even amongst those who saw Krishna 5,000, over 5,000 years ago, maybe a handful, very few outside of Vrindavan, because Vrindavan is a different situation, actually understood that Krishna was God. Only the devotees who are fully surrendered unto the Supreme Lord can understand by the grace of the Supreme Personality of God that he is Krishna. Wow. Thank you, Prabhupada. The devotees of the Lord do not bother about the impersonal Brahman conception of God. It's quite boring. Their faith and devotion bring them to surrender immediately to the Supreme Lord, and out of the cause of mercy of Krishna, they can understand Krishna. No one else can understand him. So even great sages agree. What is Atma? What is the Supreme? It is he whom we have to worship. So the great sages are different than ordinary sages. So all the great sages agree. Now, another important verse here. Yo mamma jamanatim chaveti loka maheshwaram asamuda savarjeshu sarvapapai pramuchyate. Ya, anyone who, mam, me, ajam, unborn, anadim, without beginning, cha, also, veti, knows, loka of the planets, maheshwaram, the Supreme Master, asamuda, undeluded. Saha, he, marjeshu, among those subject to death. Sarva papai, from all sinful reactions, pramuchyate, is delivered. He who knows me as the unborn, as the beginningless, as the Supreme Lord of all the worlds, he only, that means only that person, undiluted among men, is free from all sins. So you have to know Krishna has no birth. He always exists. Also, the soul is like that too. We learned that in the second chapter. Ajo nitya sashvato yam purana hanyate hanyamani sharire. And that means the soul is also beginningless. But Krishna is the greatest of those who are unborn. He's the source of all those who are unborn. He's the supreme father of all those who are unborn. He's the unlimited amongst those who are unborn. And we are limited, teeny, tiny. And anyway, but we are also beginningless. So once you understand the difference, and that's brought out in the Upanishads, nicho nichanam chetanas chetanam eko bahunam yo vidadati kamam. What is that? There are many eternals, but there is one supreme eternal. And that supreme eternal is maintaining and guiding all the plural eternals. And we're one of the plural eternals. Of course, I'm only one of the plural. I'm not the plural. So purport. As stated in the seventh chapter, text 3, manushanam sahasreshu kaschit yadati siriye. Remember that? Out of those, thousands of those who are perfect, or those who are trying to elevate themselves, hardly anyone is perfect, and out of those who are perfect, hardly anyone knows Krishna. Those who are trying to elevate themselves to the platform of spiritual realization are not ordinary men. They are superior to millions and millions of ordinary men who have no knowledge of spiritual realization. But out of those actually trying to understand their spiritual situation, one who can come to the understanding that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of God, the proprietor, means owner of everything, the unborn, is the most successful spiritually realized person. And that's very rare. Abhanakshanam sahasra shukhascha yatati siriye yatatam api siranam kashyam mam veti tatvataha. Hardly anyone knows Krishna the truth. In that stage, only when one has fully understood Krishna's supreme position can one be free completely from all sinful reactions. Here the Lord is described by the word aja, meaning unborn. But he's distinct from the living entities who are described in the second chapter as aja. Remember, ajo nitya shashvatam yam purana and hanyate hanyamane shariri, which I just quoted. The Lord is different from the living entities who are taking birth and dying due to material attachment. And we're unborn, but we keep taking bodies. We experience our existence as, in terms of bhava, taking birth and dying. So for all intents and purposes, the experiential circumstance is that we are born and we die. That's our experience. But according to the spiritual point of view, we don't die and we're not born. The conditioned souls are changing their bodies, but his body is not changeable. Even when he comes to this material world, he comes as the same unborn. Therefore, in the fourth chapter, it is said that the Lord, by his internal potency, is not under the inferior material energy, but is always in the superior energy. A sample of that is when Krishna was on this earth about 125 years, he looked like he was 16 years old. 16 is the prime of life. You know, 16, 70 is the prime of life. After that, it's all downhill. So why should Krishna go downhill? I know in the Sistine Chapel, you have a picture of God, and he's depicted as a very old man. But that's not God. because it's not nice to be in a very old body. And Krishna's not in a body, he is his body. He's non-different from his body, non-different from his name. There's no duality there. And this, and Krishna's body is always youthful, Navayovanam cha, right? Advaita chuta nadim, nandalukram, adyam puranam purusham, Navayovanam cha. Vedeshu durlabam adurlabam atmabhakto govindamadi purusham kamaham vajamu. In this verse, the word Veti Loka Maheshram indicate that one should know that Lord Krishna is the supreme proprietor of the planetary systems of the universe. He was existing before the creation, and he is different from his creation. All the demigods were created within this material world. But as far as Krishna is concerned, it is said that he is not created. Therefore, Krishna is different even from the great demigods, like Brahma and Shiva. Now, Shiva is in a very special category, different than Brahma. Brahma generally is a jiva soul. That means he's like you and I, but someone who really wants to run the show but be Krishna conscious at the same time. Like if you really like to manage. Like I was just listening to a memory of one of my godbrothers. He went to Mayapur one time and he looked at Mayapur and he was thinking, boy, I'd really like to manage this place. So immediately he gets pulled in front of Prabhupada and Prabhupada said, yeah, you stay here and manage. So those who have this tendency for management and their devotees, they may become Lord Brahma, but you can't become Lord Shiva. Lord Shiva is a special expansion of Krishna, a special category, we call that tattva, a special category. He's a unique person, and he's the greatest devotee of Krishna. And because he is the creator, that is, Krishna is the creator of Brahma, Shiva, and all the other demigods, he is the supreme person of all the planets. Hmm. Sri Krishna is therefore different from everything that is created, and anyone who knows him as such immediately becomes liberated from all sinful reaction. You remember Chinchin Beta Beta Tattva? We say Krishna is therefore different from everything that is created and also the same. Because everything is his energy. The sun and the sunshine. The sun is different than the sunshine. But in one sense, they're the same. Like you say, let the sun in. But you're not actually letting the sun in, you're letting the sun shine in, but in one sense they're the same, but they're also different. One must be liberated from all sinful activities to be in the knowledge of the Supreme Lord. Only by devotional service can he be known, and not by any other means, as stated in Bhagavad Gita. One should not try to understand Krishna as a human being. As stated previously, only a foolish person thinks of him or thinks him to be a human being. This is again expressed here in a different way. A man who is not foolish, who is intelligent enough to understand the constitutional position of the Godhead, is always free from all sinful reactions. Now, Krishna sometimes acts like an ordinary human being for his own enjoyment. It's not that he actually becomes an ordinary human being, but for his own enjoyment. You know, someone, like Prabhupada gave the example of previous president of the United States, Kennedy, who was playing with his little son, I think it was John or something like that, and he was getting down on all fours and making believe he was a horse. It's not that he became a horse. For his own enjoyment with his son, he was acting as a horse, and one of the ambassadors was shocked to see him. So Krishna acts as an ordinary person, and that's his enjoyment. And when Krishna remembers that he's God, he's not having as much fun. The real fun is when Krishna lets down his hair and just becomes one of the boys. If Krishna is known as the son of Devaki, then how can he be unborn? That is also explained in the Srimad Bhagavatam. When he appeared before Devaki and Vasudeva, he was not born as an ordinary child. He appeared in his original form and then he transformed himself into an ordinary child. In other words, the first time they saw him, he was floating in the air at four arms and was extremamente effulgent. And then Devaki got really scared. Wow, Kamsa sees dogs here and they want to kill you. So once you come as an ordinary kid, and Krishna said, okay, Mom, I came as an ordinary kid. Same transcendental body. He can exhibit himself in any way he wants with that transcendental body. Because the transcendental body is the same as Krishna. Anything done under the direction of Krishna is transcendental. It cannot be contaminated by material reaction, which may be auspicious or inauspicious. The conception that there are things auspicious or inauspicious in the material world is more or less a mental concoction, because there is nothing auspicious in the material world. Of course, what is auspicious is the opportunity to perform devotional service, but material things are not auspicious. Everything is inauspicious because their very material nature is inauspicious. It's like saying, okay, the example Prabhupada gives is in a prison house. Prabhupada says there are first-class prisoners, and then there are prisoners in solitary confinement. So the first-class prisoners think this is the life, but actually they're still in prison. We simply imagine it to be auspicious. Real auspiciousness depends on activities in Krishna consciousness and full devotion and service. Therefore, if we at all want our activities to be auspicious, then we should work under the directions of the Supreme Lord. Such directions are given in authoritative scriptures such as Srimad Bhagavatam, Bhagavad Gita, or from a bona fide spiritual master. Because the spiritual master is the representative of the Supreme Lord. His direction is directly the direction of the Supreme Lord. The spiritual master, saintly person, and scriptures direct in the same way. There is no contradiction in these three sources. All actions done under such directions are freed from the reactions of pious or impious activities of the material world. The transcendental attitude of the devotee in the performance of activities is actually that of renunciation, and this is called sannyas. Remember we talked about sannyas? Sannyas means basically to accept things favorable to Krishna consciousness, and yas, and yasi, means to reject things unfavorable. And even though one is not formally a sannyasi or a swami, one can be in actuality a sannyasi in that regard, in any ashram. And swami, they can be a swami. Swami means master, master of the senses. As stated in the first verse of the sixth chapter of Bhagavad Gita, one who acts as a matter of duty, because he has been ordered to do so by the Supreme Lord and who does not seek shelter in the fruits of his activities, anashrita karma palam, is not taking shelter in the fruit of karma, is a true renouncer. Anyone acting under the direction of the Supreme Lord is actually a sannyasi and a yogi, and not the man who has simply taken the dress of a sannyasi or pseudo-yogi. So we find people, many people dress up as sannyasi just to make a living. Prabhupada had a neighbor who would go out every day dressed up as a sannyasi, kiss his wife goodbye in the morning, come back with all the goodies that he collected as a begging sannyasi and change into his household robes. That's a Kali Yuga sannyasi. Generally, sannyas is prohibited in Kali Yuga. Okay? So, tomorrow we'll continue with texts 4 to 5. So now we can take questions. Okay? Just give me 1 second. We will take you off mute. Okay. Who wants to ask a question? Oh, Mother Tulsi. Okay, ask a question.
Prabhupada says that he appeared in his original...
Wait, let me turn the volume up a little. I can't hear you. Okay, ask your question now.
Prabhupada says in his purport that Krishna appeared in his original form.
Yeah.
The four-handed.
Well, that's one of Krishna's original forms. In one sense, it depends on the context. It depends on the context. Like, original form can mean any one of Krishna's transcendental manifestations. Or in another context, it can mean Krishna in Vrindavan. It just depends. You have to understand the context by understanding the totality of Prabhupada's work. That is called hermeneutics. That means when you take shelter of Herman, you will have no more nutics left. Anyway, that's a joke. Hermeneutics means you understand the Siddhanta and you understand what Prabhupada is saying in terms of the Siddhanta. Siddhanta means perfect conclusion, understanding like that. It's, you know, sometimes Prabhupada is actually, as we mentioned in one of the previous classes, when Prabhupada said one should not think of any other form other than Krishna, Prabhupada is exhibiting his bhava at that point. So there's a methodology. Now, obviously, Prabhupada did talk about Lord Ram and did think about Lord Ram from time to time, and did think about Krishna and Dwarka from time to time. So we have to understand, that's why you need the guidance of a devotee to understand Shastra. So, other questions? Oh, let's take. Oh, we got Mayapur, Jampaka, and someone else is asking a question.
Sumukha.
Sumuk. Oh, Sumuk.
Yes.
Sumuk, you ask your question.
Okay. We know there are four yugas. One is Satyuga. In Satyuga, we used to do Dhyana Yoga. So
yeah.
Dhyana Yoga means you're aware of what you're chanting. Like, you know, when you chant, you're aware. Dhyana is there. You know, meditation. So in Kali Yuga, when you chant, you know, we sometimes we're not able to do Dhyana, but Dhyana is for Satyuga. You understand what I'm saying?
Kali Yuga, we do dhyana after we chant. The chanting helps us meditate on Krishna. It's not that we don't meditate on Krishna, but by the bhakti yoga process, especially the chanting. I got to put someone on mute. Hold on a second. I got to cut that. Who is speaking? Give me 1 second. All right, they must have put themselves on mute. Okay, so let me go back. So let's say in Kali Yuga, Ekon Dharma Krishna Nam Sankirtan. There's one Dharma, Krishna Nam Sankirtan, and everything else is subservient, like Jnana, to Kali, to chanting the Lord's holy names. Everything else is subservient. But definitely meditation occurs when you chant the Lord's holy names. So we don't negate meditation, but that's not our primary process. All right?
Gurudev. Thank you, Gurudev.
Thank you, Sumuk. Okay, Champaka Lata has a question. What's the question?
Hare Krishna, Gurudev. So I always wondered, ever since I was a child, why it was that Devaki would be scared seeing Vishnu with his four arms, and she'd rather he be a baby. And then it was just a few years ago that this one, a Prabhupada disciple, we were doing a drama of the birth of Lord Krishna at Jamashtami, and he said, you know, Krishna was born as a baby with four arms. And sure enough, I looked in Krishna book, and that's what it actually says. So then, I don't know, maybe this is just speculation, but perhaps she was afraid because he was a baby, but he had four arms, which would indicate that he would be the cause of Kamsa's death, and Kamsa would want to kill him. Ordinary.
Well, because he has four arms, Kamsa would assume that he was Vishnu.
Yeah. But is that correct? I mean, I guess it's in Krishna book, so it must be correct. The paintings, though, show that he was...
Painting doesn't show that. The painting shows Krishna, Vishnu appearing before. Let me do some research on that. But the painting, which was done under Prabhupada's direction, actually shows Vishnu floating in the air.
Right, and in his original form, as a...
Yeah, with all the implements and everything like that. Yeah.
Yeah.
Let me look into that and see. I mean, I'm sure it's explained by the acharyas like Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur and others. So let me check that out. That's a good point. Thank you.
Thank you, Gurudev.
I thought you were going to ask me about dressing up and everything like that.
Oh. I mean, I could say something about that if you want me to.
Yeah, well, dressing up for Krishna is good. But dressing up to impress people on Facebook is another thing. There's two separate
things. I can't say that I'm at the level where I'm only thinking about pleasing Krishna, but I had a realization some years ago that it was kind of profound that just as we decorate the temple, we decorate the altar, the decoration of the body is supposed to be in that same mood, that the body is a temple.
Yes.
You know, if the idea yes. is, and it also depends on your service, you know, obviously we don't decorate every part of the temple. So if your service, like you've given me the service to dance, so if that's your service, then it's appropriate to decorate.
Oh, yes, yourself. Very nice. No, very nice. My statement was not meant to in any way cast aspersion on your decorating yourself dancing for Krishna in the morning. But what was to cast aspersion on, let's say, decorating ourselves to draw attention to our body. You know, it's just like, it's decorating ourselves to look nice, to present Krishna consciousness is fine. I mean, it's not that we should be avadutas. But at the same time, if we're simply interested in drawing attention to ourselves, and men also have ways, maybe not decoration, of drawing attention to themselves. So the whole point is, whatever we do should be done to draw attention to Krishna. And if our Facebook page becomes a fashion show, then it's a problem. I mean, it's all right. I mean, I tolerate so many things. I'm not gonna go on a rampage. Maybe I already did. But anyway, against people who do that, I mean, I think it's a natural material propensity. Except, you know, amongst those who actually spend many, many years in devotional service, I guess it's an unrealistic expectation to expect a little bit of detachment in this world. I mean, if I were to go on the internet and just, like, I don't know what I would show off. Not too many things about an old body to show off. But anyway, that would be kind of funny. So, basically, whatever we do, even if we dress nicely, should be done with the intention of glorifying Krishna and bringing people's attention to Krishna. That's the point. That's the point. I'm not against dressing nicely. If the intention is to actually bring people to Krishna, then it is wonderful. Then, you know, it's ecstatic. So.
Thank you, Gurudev.
Yeah. Anyway, I defended myself. So, anyway. Who else? I think,
Mayapur,
you had a question.
Yes, Gurudev, please accept my humble obeisances. So, there's a certain woman, an elder woman who I won't mention, who's always trying. I'm not going to say who. You shouldn't say who. Who's always basically trying to say that women are dependent on men for their spiritual lives and for being successful. And I feel like I'm at a loss to really answer this person. So I was hoping you could say something.
Well, she's right. They're dependent on Krishna. Oh my God. They're dependent on Krishna. He's the supreme male. He's Purusha. And what are we? You answer me. What are we? If Krishna's Purusha, what are we?
We're Stri.
We're Prakriti in relationship. So I'm dependent on a man too. So yes, it's absolutely true. We have to be dependent on a man for our spiritual life. And that man is Krishna. And I'm also dependent on the his transcendental consort, Radharani. So I'm actually transcendent. I'm dependent on a couple, not just a man, but a man and a woman. I don't want to say Radharani is a woman, but I'm dependent on both of them. How about that? So yes, you're right. I mean, I should read to you. Where is it on Bhagavatam? This is so funny. Let me get my Bhagavatam out. This is such a funny verse. I wanted to read. give me a second before my Bhagavatam boots up. So this verse has to do, let me give you a little introduction. This has to do with the conversation between Krishna and Rukmini, where Rukmini is criticizing ordinary men. Actually, I just read it the other night. I was reading it before I was going to sleep, and then I couldn't sleep because it was so funny. Give me one second. You know, nowadays, Bhagavatam has to boot up. So that's a problem. Just give me a second. So she starts describing, let me just paraphrase before it boots up. She starts describing ordinary men and their bodies full of bile, mucus. Everybody know this verse? Trumpagub's probably heard it before. But it's so cool that I can't refrain from reading it. So Krishna and Rukmini have had this whole discussion because Krishna is trying to evoke the anger of Rukmini Devi by telling her that you found the wrong husband. You should have actually married, wait a second, should have actually married Sishupal or someone nice. And then Krishna denigrates himself in different ways. Give me a second, I got to get to that verse. It'll take a second, all of you be patient. Maybe it'll take more than a second, but I know I just read it. It's actually really funny. Krishna is very pleased with Rukmini for not getting angry with him and speaking words of love. Oh my God, I can't find it. Give me one second. This is hard when you're doing electronic books, because otherwise I could page through it right away. Oh, here it is. Here it is. This is answers your question. A woman who fails to relish the fragrance of the honey of your lotus feet becomes totally befooled, and thus she accepts as her husband or lover a living corpse covered with skin, whiskers, nails, head hair, and body hair, and filled with flesh, bones, blood, parasites, feces, mucus, bile, and air. I hope that answers your question.
Yes, does that answer your question? Yes, Greedy, thank you.
Oh, let me read it again. I mean, it's just like so amazing. This is Rukmini. Do not blame me. If you want to blame anyone, you blame Rukmini Devi. A woman who fails to relish the fragrance of the honey of your lotus feet becomes totally befooled unless she accepts as her husband or lover a living corpse covered with skin, whiskers, nails, head hair, body hair, and filled with flesh, bones, blood, parasites, feces, mucus, bile, and air. Anyway. Oh my God. Now I'm going to get in real trouble. You just put the nail in my coffin. All right, so... No, don't go against your wife. The wife and husband relationship is sacred. Yeah. But we serve Krishna using that relationship. All right, no more questions, Sumuk. Let someone else, one more question from someone else. Anyone else ask a question? Or you're all scared to after that answer? Radha Padma.
Hare Krishna, Guru Maharaj. Please accept my humble obeisances. Gurudev, we've been talking in this verse, then where we are talking about Brahma and Shiva. So is Brahma Jiva Tattva?
Generally, Brahma is Jiva Tattva. Sometimes when there's no Brahma to take over the universe, then Lord Krishna steps in.
And Lord Shiva?
Lord Shiva is a special tattva. He's called Shiva Tattva. He's not a Jiva and he's not Krishna, Vishnu Tattva. Somewhere in between. He's Krishna's special expansion to deal with the material world. So it's a special, he's in a special category of his own. That's Lord Shiva, as the greatest devotee. Okay, I think we have to end now before I get myself in more trouble. I just couldn't keep myself from reading that verse from the Bhagavatam.
Okay, but I have the next argument that would be brought up. Is that generally speaking, it's very popular now that a woman needs to take shelter of a man like her son or a guru who's a man. And it's like emphatic that certain women and certain people will emphasize this, that women are dependent like that and that it always must be a man figure, that I have to take shelter of a man, a son, a husband, a guru, some man figure so that I can be successful in Krishna consciousness in this life.
Well, I think we all need to take shelter of some dominant figure. I do. Prabhupada. Prabhupada's my man figure. I need to take shelter of him. So he's my role model. And actually, it's a fact. We all need the shelter. Outside of the association devotees, Prabhupada did allow women to have their own ashrams. And there's that whole story about Jamuna Devi, she had an ashram. Prabhupada said she could do that. Generally in this world, I mean, just generally, the ladies should be protected, yes. Why is that? It's not a deficiency in the ladies so much, but it's a deficiency in the men. The men will exploit the soft-hearted nature of the women. So yes, it's important, and Prabhupada did want our ladies to be protected within the Krishna consciousness movement. So there's two sides of the issue. It's not like an all black and white thing. The ladies should be protected, but I would say also the men should be protected. I see people who think that they can be Krishna conscious outside of the society of devotees, and Prabhupada said they're simply living in hallucination. So I think most of us in Kali Yuga are just very weak-minded, and we need that protection. Men and women. I mean, that's what I've seen. I mean, I've seen more women stick out in Krishna consciousness than the men. Stick together, you know, stick to Krishna consciousness than the men. If you look at percentage-wise, I see that more of my god sisters have actually stuck to Krishna consciousness than my god brothers. In general, it's like that. So, you know, this whole question of intelligence or unintelligence or whatever, Kali Yuga, we're all unintelligent. We need the association of devotees. And we need shelter. We need protection. So, all right, let me get out of this difficult situation and end class now. Thank you very much for your attention, and pray for me after this class. Because I'm sure there will be some arrows coming my way. All glories to His Divine Grace, Śrīla Prabhupāda, Śrīla Prabhupāda, Ki Jai, Gaura Prema Nanda, Hare Krishna.